She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Our show today is made possible due to the generous support of the Fairfax companies, true leaders in the business of sustainability, and we love them. Since 1989, Fairfax has strived to be a leader in sustainability and is dedicated to improving the environment through creative and innovative management practices. They never cease to amaze me. A shout out to Jason Tankersley, their fearless leader, and all they do to make a difference as a powerful team changing the world. Please visit them at thefairfaxcompanies.com to find out more about them. So in preparing for this show, I was trying to think if it would be what my mom would say, ay, ay, ay. I love talking about my mom. Or if I would say, as many of my teachers throughout my education said, put your thinking caps on. So whichever one of those floats your boat, whether it's oy, 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 get ready, or put your thinking caps on, I invite you to get ready for a great show. The name of our show is Women Versus Toxic Chemicals. All of you know it's one of my biggest passions. Please join me in welcoming Erin Swatalski. Erin, how'd I do with that pronunciation?
You got it.
I got it, man. That's thank goodness. I really don't like to mispronounce the star of the show guest's name. She is the executive director of Women's Voices for the Earth. So press pause and take that in. An organization with a very important mission to amplify women's voices to eliminate the toxic chemicals that harm our health, our families, our children, our communities. Women's Voices envisions a world where women lead to create a healthy environment without toxic chemicals. Imagine that in our workplaces, our homes, and our communities. It was formed by a group of visionary women. I wish I had been one of them. Leaders in Missoula, Montana in 1995, so over 20 years ago. Welcome, Erin, and thank you for being with us and for everything you're doing with your organization to make a difference for all of us.
Well, great. I'm really happy to be here, so thank you for having me.
We are so excited. We just can't hide it. So paint a picture for us. I'm always just enthralled with thinking about what I was doing 20 years ago versus 10 years ago even, and for the thought leaders, I call them, that knew there were troublesome things going on. What were they seeing back then, both in terms of warning signs for our health and the troublesome way that they were being addressed, what I call like the silo effect? Yeah, well, they're doing that and they're doing that, but nobody's talking to each other. So what was the landscape looking like back then?
Yeah. Well, I am actually not one of the original founding members, so I really have a lot of respect for the founding mothers of the organization. And as you noted, we are based in Missoula, Montana. So when Women's Voices started, we were really a locally focused group. And it was really, you know, designed by a group of women who at the time, we're really interested in trying to figure out how to engage on environmental issues. And there's just really a great story that one of our founders, Brian E. Schwann, always reminds me of. She was a graduate of the Environmental Studies program, which is here at the University of Montana, and she was attending environmental meetings and basically went and said, hey, you know, what can I do to help? I really want to be a part of working to solve some of these environmental issues. And they literally told her in 1995, the leadership at the time said, it would be really great if you could bring, like, the cookies and tea to the meeting.
You're kidding me.
I am not kidding.
No, you made that up.
In 1995.
You made that up.
I wish I had. And so, naturally, she said, that is not the kind of leadership I'm looking for. I'm going to basically, and neither were all of these other brilliant women who really wanted to make a difference. And so they left and they said, you know, what we're looking for is we're looking to take on environmental problems where we're not just talking about the trees and the forests and the rivers, which are all very important things, but what we're seeing is here at that time in Missoula, Montana, we had a local paper mill, and it was pumping out a lot of dioxin into the air. And we are a valley that's surrounded by 5 mountain ranges, so that air was getting trapped in the valley. So what they're seeing is lots of mothers with kids with asthma and people leaving because the air quality was so poor, you didn't want to breathe in the air. And so this group of women said, the environment is so intricately linked to health, and women are the primary caregivers of the household. They're generally making, and this remains true today, generally making most of the healthcare decisions in the family. They're really involved in, their children's lives, whether it's through school or any other activities. And the founders said, we need to really connect these things because the environment is so much more than whether or not the trees and the rivers are healthy, but really it's about whether or not the health of our families is also being protected.
And if the trees and the rivers aren't healthy, guess what, folks?
People
that are walking around those rivers and swimming in them and all that are not healthy either. So
absolutely,
we moved forward from serving coffee and tea. That's like, I don't get a lot of shocks on the show, but that was like that was like a kick in the stomach. Whoa, that was what my mother would say. Oh yeah, yeah. So
exactly.
So when you talk about, I think you answered it, but just articulate it a little more, because another huge piece of this is women are the purchasing power. They buy everything for the house, for the kids' products, for their clothing, on and on. So is that, what were the components that were used to decide why women's health, why focus on that? Is it the exclusion of people not talking about it, or talk about some of the components for that piece?
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons. So, over the years, women's voices really moved to have a particular focus looking at toxic chemicals, because that was such an important issue for women, and women could really relate to it. They could really connect the environment and health through this issue of toxic chemicals, and it's just a really important one. So, but what we've seen when you look at the research is that, there's something like 80,000 chemicals that are out there for use right now in the marketplace in the United States. We know that only about 200 have actually been thoroughly evaluated for safety. And when you look at those chemicals and how they've been tested, they've mainly been looked at for their short-term impacts on adult males. So there's a big gap there in terms of how are those chemicals impacting women's health.
I don't think it's funny. I just want you to know that's like, wow, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's still true. And, what we found in our work is that one of our really important roles is to help people ask the right questions so that, in particular, whether it's corporations or researchers, like, are you asking these questions? I mean, are you thinking about how a chemical might impact a women's reproductive health system, which is very different than how it's going to impact, 160-pound adult male? So that is one of the primary reasons we've looked at women's health. We've also seen, women are disproportionately harmed by toxic chemical exposure. Women tend to have a higher percentage of body fat than men, and toxins accumulate in fat. That's one place that they're stored. So we're just generally kind of storing more of those chemicals. When you look at the health impacts, you know, we've seen breast cancer rates. They're in the last two decades, they've risen from 1 in 20 to 1 in 8.
I mean, people, you just need to, like, say that slowly, because I don't think people understand. Listen to that number, and I invite you to say it again. This is how we're doing with breast cancer, folks.
Yeah, in the last two decades, we have seen breast cancer rates rise from 1 in 20 to 1 in 8. We're seeing girls reaching puberty as early as 7 years old, and there is a link between early puberty and all of these endocrine-disrupting chemicals that are being put into products. We see an even greater burden on women of color in the United States. So to give you one example, there was a recent study that found that women who use vaginal douching products have much higher levels of phthalates in their blood than women who don't. And black women have 48% higher levels of phthalates in their bodies than white women. And then we know that some of the most toxic products on the market, like skin lighteners or hair relaxers and dyes, those are marketed to women of color, and they contain some of the most toxic chemicals on the market.
Like chemical cocktails, basically.
Chemical cocktails and chemicals that are, it's shocking that it's legal for them to be in there. Formaldehyde. Most people are pretty familiar with formaldehyde. It's a known cancer-causing chemical. It's perfectly legal for that chemical to be in our products right now, which is pretty astounding.
It's appalling. It's appalling.
It's appalling.
And just, you know, going back to what you said, I love the numbers. Not to interrupt your flow, but 80,000 chemicals out there, 200 tested, and then I think the big whopping number, 60 banned. It's not more than that. I don't really think it's more than that. So we are our report
it's
card.
Actually, it's much less. It's 5.
What?
Yeah. So we are we're woefully behind. When that law was passed originally in 1976, it grandfathered in over 60,000 chemicals that were already in use and called them safe. Currently, there is a reform effort of the Toxic Substances Control Act, and it was recently passed by the Senate. We feel like it has some shortcomings. And it still needs, there still needs to be some work on the bill. It was passed actually by the Senate and the House, and now it needs to go to a conference committee where it's going to be really important to make sure that we can keep the strongest version of the bill that we can. But it still is going to leave us, unfortunately, I think underprotected when it comes to
it's like the farm
chemicals.
It's like the farm bill, which is a whole nother conversation.
Right.
But it's like let's water that down so it's non. And you know, when you're saying that, I'm sitting here as a mother and as a grandmother, as a girlfriend, saying all the while this is happening, literally, men, women, and children are dying because it's in the Senate committee being studied.
Right.
So let's keep that formaldehyde in there. Let's keep those things that are giving kids asthma and autism and ADD, and we're going to put it in committee. I mean, I understand the part about studying it and keep it strong, but, like, why are we dragging our feet? We don't need any new research.
Well, and that's the thing that, you know, we are an innovative country. There is a whole movement of a green chemistry movement. There are researchers and developers who are making really exciting, safe molecules, and we should be encouraging the use of those. Let's stop using the petrochemicals that are, you know, really linked to all of these health problems, and let's encourage development of this burgeoning green chemistry field. Let's use an approach where we are looking for the least hazardous chemical possible to create things versus just maintaining the status quo, which is what we continue to do because there's a lot of money in that right now. A lot of manufacturers that make these chemicals that don't want to be put out of business.
And is it You know, we have an expression in our family, Mr. Green and I, if it's not about the money, it's about the money. I mean, we've done hundreds of shows since we started 10 years ago. So it's about the money. It's about earnings per share. Aren't these people fathers, mothers, grandmothers? That's what always gets me. They're human beings in those positions. What's up with that? I'm not expecting you to answer it, but maybe you want to like calm me down a little bit.
Well, you know, we typically work with manufacturers that are developing the consumer products. And it's interesting because we'll go in and we'll have these direct conversations with, you know, with the toxicologists who work at Procter & Gamble or SC Johnson, which makes Windex. And I think a lot of times, I mean, they are family people, and they do not believe that they're making things that are harmful. And I think that it's a difference of perspective, and we often provide some questions and perspective that they haven't considered. And so I think that we have to create sort of we're talking about a huge paradigm shift. You know, they're really coming from a place of, well, we're only using this tiny amount of chemical, and so we think that it's going to take, you know, X times this amount in order for any harm to come. And what we're saying is, well, we don't actually know that. Science is showing that tiny amounts can have different effects, whether it's in utero, whether it's, you know, it actually was your grandmother who was exposed, and now generations later the effects are being seen. And so why don't we take a look at it, and instead of asking how little can we or how much can we put in before it causes harm, and say, how can we actually ensure that the basic, that whatever that chemical does not come with a hazard in the first place, so that we're safe rather than sorry. It's the precautionary principle. And that's a real shift in thinking, and that's a real shift in how really in how toxicologists are trained. So this is a huge issue.
And as you're talking, I'm thinking the question could be, how much poison, I like to call them poison sometimes because I think it's more pejorative, would it be okay for me to put in this baby shampoo so that it would only cause minimal harm to your infant? How's that working for you? Can I put
really
a little bit
want?
In? Because it would only hurt the baby a little bit and just increase their cancer risk, you know, 2%. What's up with that? I mean, I don't want to get carried away. It's your show. It's like I'm the host, but it's like you say things and I'm like, OMG, hashtag OMG. What is up with this? It's like, as a mother, the mother comes out in me, and it's like, I want to know that your product is not going to hurt my child. That's not
Absolutely.
Too tough, is it? I guess
absolutely.
It is. Yeah, yeah.
And you're really hitting on the sentiment that engages so many women around this work. You know, we did a campaign a few years ago now where we actually got Procter & Gamble, who makes Tide, which is the number one laundry detergent sold in the United States.
Another one of my favorite targets. Go ahead.
I know. And they agreed to reformulate all of their laundry detergents, you know, including Tide. They have other brands too, and I think in total they represent like 70% of the laundry detergent market in the U.S. But they agreed to reformulate to strip out a chemical called 1,4-dioxane, which is actually, it's something they didn't intentionally add to the product, but it was a known byproduct because of two other chemicals that they do put in the product. And they knew that it was creating this. It's a really common byproduct, but there's also a really simple process for stripping it out before they, you know, put the product on the market, and they weren't doing that. And so we brought this issue up and started a social media campaign, and we were just overwhelmed by the response of women. We we had these little pictures of babies in a laundry basket with their Tide, and particularly it was focused on Tide Free and Gentle, which they, you know, were marketing to new moms as this healthy choice for their babies. And we tested it, and we found this 1,4-dioxane in there, and we said, hey, okay, you know, so we had this baby saying, OMG, there's a cancer-causing chemical in my detergent.
And that's not okay.
And that's not okay.
And
you know,
hold
we
that
said,
thought.
Hey, post this on.
I told you we'd be in some dramatic moment. I warned you. Okay, so just right on cue, we'll be right back. Everybody, please stay here with me. Erin Slut, oh, I don't have your name right in front of me, but we'll say it right when I come back. We'll be right back, everybody. Smooth transition there.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Pacific Time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmerglass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. And now, more with Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us. Just another quick shout-out to the Fairfax companies for helping make this show possible. To find out more about them and their role as leaders in sustainability, please visit them at thefairfaxcompanies.com. I apologize for that really lame outgo of the show, but I'm so engrossed in the content of the show, so listening to the guests we have. Please join me once again in welcoming Erin Switalski. She is the executive director of Women's Voices for the Earth, an organization with a very important mission to amplify women's voices to eliminate the toxic chemicals that harm our health and our communities. And trust me when I say they are everywhere. So, Erin, I do apologize for that, but I was so proud of saying your name right. And then it's like,
not at all.
It's just like, okay.
It doesn't bother me.
It's because it's such good content. It's really incredible. So, when we last spoke, you were talking about the Gentle Tide for babies that they were marketing to young mothers who truly care about the health of their children. And let's finish that whole segment up.
Yeah, so we had, you know, tested it and found the cancer-causing chemical 1,4-dioxane in there. And so we told our community about this, and we created a social media image and said, hey, why don't we post this on Tide's Facebook page? Let's send a message to them that this is not okay. And we had over 4,000 people put up these posts and send emails to the company and contact them. And they ultimately, in just a matter of a few months, they announced that they would be reformulating all of their laundry detergents to make sure they stripped out this cancer-causing chemical. So it speaks, you know, I think really hugely to the power that women actually have.
Yes.
And
yes.
We have
yes.
a tremendous
yes.
amount of consumer power. We are the target audience for these companies, and so to take, you know, our opinions and demands and make them public in front of the company is really important, and it really works.
And it's so, I just want to like ring the bell, press pause, pound the drums. Every one of our listeners hear what Erin is saying. You make a difference. The way that you buy your products, what kind of products you buy matters. Signing a petition matters. Contracting, you know, the manufacturer, whatever it is you decide, they're listening. And that's what it takes, the amplification of all of those things. You know, I just want to do a little segue here. How did you go from, you know, Missoula, Montana, Women's Voices for the Earth, we're going to get rid of pollution in the valley, to a force? Like, what was
yeah.
some of the transition? Because now you're talking to people like Procter & Gamble. So what took it out of that and into the much more national and global arena?
Yeah. Well, you know, really what happened is as we were doing our work locally, we just recognized that these the connections between health and the environment, and particularly the specific focus on engaging women in this work, really wasn't being represented at the national level. And we felt like there was so much potential, and so many, you know, everyone that we talked to wanted to be involved in this work. And so we decided that in order to make the kinds of impacts that we really wanted to make, which need to be made on a broad, you know, a broad policy level, we need to pass laws and federal laws as well. We need to really get corporations to change how they're doing business. Those things have to be done on the national level. And so we sort of took the model that we had worked with here and started to just expand and reach out. And one of the first campaigns that we did was partnering with a number of other organizations. We were one of the co-founders of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics.
Oh my
gosh.
That
was kind of the EWG. First national campaign. EWG.
We love them. Yep. Yes.
Yep. And they have the amazing Skin Deep database, which
yes.
I always rely on and encourage listeners. If you
And put it as an app on your phone.
Yep. Put it as an app on your phone if you are curious about, you know, how safe one of your cosmetics or personal care products is. This database is an excellent resource for kind of looking up what you're using.
It is the go-to place. So, yeah, you started just seeing a much bigger picture. And there are some things that I, you know, getting down to, there's two questions here. I think there are two major pieces when it comes to bringing about lasting change. And I just want to say something about your logo that says Women Voices for the Earth, Our Health, Our Future, Toxic Free. And don't we all get to, mm-hmm. don't we get to all envision a world where that's happening? But there's the public policy versus the purchasing power.
Yep.
Do you weigh in more heavily on one or the other? Is it different campaigns that are needed depending upon the issues? Or what's your strategy at Women's Voices for the Earth in terms of where do you put your energy?
Yeah. Well, you know, we found that we need to reach women where they're at. And one of the, you know, initial ways to reach people is people are curious about the products that they're using and whether things that they're using and bringing into their home are safe. Obviously, a lot of women become more aware around the time that they choose to have a baby, if they choose to, and they get pregnant, and you
right.
become sort of extra sensitive and, you know, just paying more attention at that time. But what we are always trying to do is, you know, we provide tips and resources for things that you can do to reduce your own exposure in your own home. But we don't, you know, have a big list of here's this products you should buy, here's other things you should, you know, here's the only kind of companies you should buy from, because really what we believe is that anybody should be able to walk into the store, pick up a product, and know that it is fully safe and healthy for their family.
Yes.
And we're not at that point. And the only way we can get to that point is if we all rise up, use our voices, call on companies to make safer products, and call on lawmakers to demand health protective policies and safe products over these corporate profits. And that's the only way that we can really be sure that the products we bring into our homes are safe, that the manufacturing facilities where those products are being made are healthy, so that the workers making them are safe, so that the communities where those factories are housed are not polluting those communities, so that when we dispose of the products that we're bringing into our homes and they go off to a recycling facility or some other disposal site, that that's healthy too, that that's not hurting those workers or harming that community. So in order to really address this full, really the full life cycle and all the people and places that could be impacted along the way, we have to look more holistically at this, and we have to just demand that the corporations change to safer chemicals, and we have to have laws that make that happen, because unfortunately the companies just aren't going to ever fully do it without laws.
Oh, they're not stepping up for all the right reasons. It's like, okay, the consumer power is unbelievable. And I know that I think I read in your website, it's 85% of buying decisions are made by women. It's no secret. I mean, I know, everybody I know, it's women buy the products. And then also another big, huge piece that I saw on your website is that 58% of all online spending is women. So I think that's an interesting statistic as well, because it is true that more men will go to the internet rather than go to the store to shop. And women will happily do both, but it's a very different dynamic. So both, we need policy changes, we need purchasing power changes. And can you just tell, like, you do have some really sharp areas of focus, because they're areas that really do assault us in every way. At home, at work, in a community center we go to, at the movies. Like, once you get all these toxic products out of your house and you go into a public restroom that has air fresheners, and you're like, what's that? It doesn't smell like carnations. You know what I mean?
Right.
So what are some of the areas of focus that you feel are critical for women's voices to focus on?
Yeah, we have basically four different campaign areas. So we have been working since 2007 to eliminate toxic chemicals from cleaning products. So we have been focusing on four major manufacturers and campaigning for them to, first of all, to disclose the ingredients they use in their products, and then obviously to take out all of the harmful ingredients and, you know, make sure that they're always using the safest ingredients available. And we've seen huge progress. When we started this campaign in 2007, there was virtually no ingredient disclosure at all for cleaning products. And now what we are at is that most, you know, all major cleaning product companies are disclosing all their ingredients except for the fragrance ingredients. And that's something I want to talk about a little bit more.
I want you to talk about it, too.
Because it's really interesting.
Fake smells, okay?
Yes. So it's such a fascinating industry, the fragrance industry. And it's really a kind of a whole separate industry, but it's obviously used in a ton of consumer products. So if you're looking at, if you pick up something that's any kind of scented item, whether it be your scented cleaning product or, you know, a scented pack of markers for your kid, on like cosmetics, you can see the word fragrance on the label, but that is a term that is representing a whole bunch of different ingredients. So a fragrance can be made up of, you know, 100 or more different ingredients.
And when you say ingredients, it's mostly chemicals. So if something is cinnamon scented, for example, you might count on that some portion of one drop of real cinnamon might be in there.
Maybe
but
not even.
Probably not. Right, exactly.
Most of the time, most of the fragrances are synthetic. And so they basically go out and they sort of, they'll like capture the scent of an actual rose, and then they'll go figure out how to manufacture that scent in the lab.
Unbelievable. Okay.
It is unbelievable. And it's like, wow, that's so exciting. But we don't know what chemicals they are using to create that scent. And there is no ingredient disclosure required for all of those, you know, up to 100 or more different ingredients that make up that fragrance. But what we do have is a list of 3,000 different materials that the fragrance industry itself has said, here's the whole list of 3,000 possible different kinds of chemicals that you could find in all of our fragrances.
3,000.
3,000, yes. So there's a lot. So there's a lot to look through. And when you look through that list, we actually we put out a report just late last year where we really did a deep dive into this fragrance industry, into the list of 3,000 chemicals, and really into what is, it's fully an industry-funded and self-regulated safety program for the fragrance industry. So the fragrance materials are overseen by this institute that's called the Research Institute for Fragrance Materials.
Okay.
But that's funded by the fragrance industry. They're charged with assessing the safety of fragrance materials, and nobody really challenges it right now. So we took a look at that, and what we found is that it's pretty shocking how that assessment process actually works. So when you look at their the scientific studies, they have really good language on their website about all the scientific research they do, the studies they produce, how thorough they are. But when you kind of dig into it, what we found is that the vast majority of their scientific studies on the fragrance materials are actually generated by major fragrance manufacturers. They're not generated by outside third-party scientists. And then these studies have pretty much never been peer-reviewed or published. And so these studies are being relied on to determine safety, yet they're not even published studies done by third-party scientists.
And Erin, what kinds of things, like people might be listening and saying, well, so what? Like, so what if it smells like, if it's cinnamon and it's fake cinnamon or fake rose? What is the kind of impact on our health? How does that show up as harming us? Which I know it does, but I want to ask you, an expert.
Yeah. Well, so what we know is that when you look at the list of ingredients, there are a whole bunch of, there are chemicals that are listed as known carcinogens. There are reproductive toxins. There are chemicals that are prohibited from use and different regulations. But they're, like, for example, there's some stricter regulations in the European Union. So we found there's at least 15 fragrance chemicals that are actually prohibited from use in cosmetics in the EU, but they could be used here for no
problem.
All of
them, right? All of them can be used here.
Yeah, they could be used.
Right.
and so it's hard to say that this is because of this fragrance you're going to exactly get cancer. That's not, we'll never be able to say
but
that.
But it's
you
exposure.
Can never trace something.
To a known carcinogen. It's like, this can't
exactly
be good. I don't
want.
Need a scientific study to think, this
right?
can hurt me. It's a known carcinogen. I don't think I'll put it on my child or my body. It's just, there's some of this that's just common sense if we only knew.
Exactly. And we're just kept in the dark about it. There's styrene. We know that's a cancer-causing chemical. We know there's phthalates in fragrance. Those are endocrine disruptors. These are not things that you want to be exposed to regularly. And the other thing that there is a lot of research on is that a lot of people have allergic reactions to fragrance.
Right.
So we know that there's an acute issue there that I think we published a study called Secret Sense in 2013, I think it was. It's on our website. But we know that at least 2% of the general population has a reaction to fragrance, and there's a bunch of allergens, known allergens, that are used in fragrance. And yet you can't avoid those as consumers because they're not listed on the label. So even if you knew you had an allergy to something, you couldn't avoid it. And if you wanted to avoid a carcinogen, you couldn't avoid it.
And
so the only thing we can suggest now is to look for fragrance-free. And that's really hard.
It is really
especially
hard.
When you're talking about cosmetics, it's
it
really
is
hard.
Really hard. And when you think about it, it's in shampoo, conditioner, anything we put on our hands, any kind of lotions. It's in hairspray, right? Our deodorants.
Oh, yeah.
Like, why does deodorant have to smell like anything when what you're trying to do is not smell?
Exactly.
And it's in sunblock. It's in lip gloss. Why does your lip gloss have to smell like strawberry? Those are things that never cease to amaze me. In lipsticks, it's just, we are assaulted with it. And that, to me, is a piece of this where it may not be just this one little particulate, but when you're putting seven of those things on your body before you go out of the house, it becomes, you know, assault level, so to speak.
Right. And it's almost like the secondhand smoke of today.
Yes.
Because if
yes.
you're sensitive to fragrance, and that I happen to be, and then I, you know, somebody sits next to me on the bus that's got a whole lot of fragrance on, I have to move. It's very difficult, you know, and it's difficult to breathe. And once you're sensitized, that is just a constant cycle of having a reaction.
And we will pause on that note, and we will be right back. Everybody, please stay here with me. Erin Switalski, the Executive Director of Women's Voices for the Earth. Lots more good stuff to share. We'll be right back.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us. The name of our show today is Women versus Toxic Chemicals. Please join me once again in welcoming Erin Switalski. She is the Executive Director of Women's Voices for the Earth, an organization with a very important mission. And I want to say very, very, very important mission for all of us to amplify women's voices, to eliminate the toxic chemicals that harm our health and our communities. They envision a world where women lead to create a healthy environment without toxic chemicals in our workplaces, homes, and communities. Women's Voices for the Earth was formed by a group of truly visionary women leaders in Missoula, Montana in 1995, so over 20 years ago. And at the time that they were founded, they saw a huge void. Women were being excluded from leadership positions. So that's really no news. 2016 is getting a little better. And it is like, oh, well, we've come a long way, baby. Not really. And also that these organizations didn't recognize the systemic connections. That's what I call connecting the dots between health, class, race, and the environment. So what were they to do? Start their own organization that just started being change agents. And here we are today having the privilege of interviewing their leader right now, Erin Switalski. So there you go. I hope everybody caught the passion in my voice on that little shout out. Erin, I want to make sure that people know, and we'll put it out on all of our social media, you know, a treasure trove of information can be found at womensvoices.org. It's a great website. It's user-friendly. And I, believe me, I look at a lot of websites in this job. I can tell you that. It's like, okay, I can find everything. And really just infographics, no secrets about who their business partners are. It's great. So, okay, let's go on a little bit. I get a little carried away, and the show is about what you're doing. It's like, let's go. Talk to us about, you just have to do this if you don't mind, because when I heard about it about a year ago, I'm like, you're kidding. It was the kick in the stomach kind of thing. Brazilian blowout. Doesn't that deserve its own mention, please? It's
yes.
disgusting.
Yeah, so Brazilian blowout it's a hair straightening treatment, and it actually contains, most of the Brazilian blowout treatments contain formaldehyde. And we first learned about this because we are part of a national coalition called the National Healthy Nail and Beauty Salon Alliance, where we're really trying to raise up salon workers' voices, because
yes.
salon workers are, you know, they're the canaries in the coal mine when it comes to some of these
yes.
products. and Brazilian blowout is one of them. So one of our partners in Oregon actually got a call from salon workers who they just kept getting sick when they were doing this treatment. They were getting bloody noses, they were dizzy, they would get nausea, fatigue, and they said, gosh, it seems like every time I do one of these Brazilian blowout treatments, I'm getting sick. And the thing is, the Brazilian blowout at that time said on the label that the product was formaldehyde-free, which was just a blatant lie. So Oregon Health and Sciences University actually took the product and tested it. They found varying levels of formaldehyde in different bottles, but they ranged from 8 to 12%. I mean, that's a huge amount of formaldehyde.
It's shocking. It's shocking.
It's a huge amount. So, you know, this was a huge expose, but the thing is that is equally as shocking is it's actually still perfectly legal for that formaldehyde to be in the product. And so what has changed is that Brazilian Blowout, the company, can no longer claim for the product to be formaldehyde free.
They can't lie on the label. Well, that's a lot of progress.
They can't lie on the label, yeah. But the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, which oversees the safety of cosmetics, and they unfortunately have really very, very little power. The law right now was passed in 1936. It's actually about 1.5 pages long, and it just doesn't give the FDA the power that they need to actually effectively regulate cosmetics. So instead of, you know, requiring that companies test chemicals before they are put into products and sold to us, we're essentially, companies can put whatever they want in and sell it, and then we all become the testing ground for these products.
And the proof has to be on us that it causes cancer, that it makes people sick,
yes,
that it's on and on, yes, and on. And it's like, yeah, what, you're testing a lot on rats. How about letting us really tell the truth about what it's doing to us already and shut it down? I don't get it, but okay.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it should be regulated more like pharmaceuticals, where you have to have some rigorous testing before something can go on the market, and that just doesn't happen at all. I mean, the skin is a huge organ. Things are absorbed. There are a lot of exposure routes with cosmetic products. And with the Brazilian blowout, that formaldehyde has made a lot of workers and also consumers sick. And some clients have lost their hair from using the product. It's been really awful. But to date, the FDA has done nothing. They have they claim that they have an ongoing investigation. It's been going on now since 2010. And in the meantime, 8 other countries have actually banned Brazilian blowout. Yet here in the United States, it's still legal, it's fine, and the FDA is quote-unquote investigating.
Right, quote-unquote, ostensibly, to the best of our knowledge at this point in time, maybe.
Yeah,
yes.
And so it's just unbelievable that that really nothing is happening. And in the meantime, workers are continuing to get sick. And we know several salon workers who have had to quit their jobs because they simply can't go into a salon anymore. They have formaldehyde poisoning, which means that any time they're exposed to any level of that now, they have a really adverse reaction. It also means that they struggle like to walk through the perfume aisle at the department store because they've had that sensitization, and now they're going to have a reaction really when they come into contact with a number of chemicals. And so it's pretty debilitating.
And it goes to the whole issue, and this could be a whole nother show, and you and I could just call it the rant, and I'm sure we could get a lot of other people beyond it, but it really goes to the whole social justice issue,
yeah,
and how these factories oftentimes are in marginalized communities. It is women making up a majority of the workforce. You know, let's,
yep,
get started on the fashion industry. I call it the filthy fashion industry, like it's one word now. And then you have this where, you know, typically women in salon. It's an hourly. It's based on tips. The base salary is not huge. Not criticisms of the industry, but they're who we're going to. You know, like, you can be sure I have had more than one guest say, I can't do that time because I have a hair appointment, because women don't miss their hair appointments. I mean, it's the God's honest truth. I mean, I don't want four-inch roots, and I'm not even going to ask you. I have, you know, let's not talk about my products. Everybody knows I'm an Aveda person because they're easily available, and I think they're doing great things, but it's still... why am I dyeing my hair? Is would be the question. But we don't need to. We don't need to talk about that on the show right now.
You know, I will put. I'll put in this interesting plug for a green chemistry hair dye solution. I haven't done it yet. I really want to order it. I don't know. I think it only works for brown shades of hair. So
which
they haven't
is good.
Figured out a solution for blondes yet. But what it does. It doesn't allow you to choose a hair color, but it restores your natural pigment, so that basically if you're covering gray, it restores your hair back to its natural color. And you have to apply it every, you know, like 6 weeks, like a dye. But it is, it was developed by John Warner, who is an amazing green chemist at the Warner Babcock Institute. And so they have now created this product. You can order online. It's called Hair Print. And going to order mine give it a try.
I was thinking about doing
a video and posting it so I can be a little test study, and I'll share that with everybody.
Oh, my gosh. That's really great. But I wrote it down. It's really Hair Print. I'm going to check it out. Thank gosh.
So because we know that hair dyes are, they're not healthy. Our vision is that we have a thriving, healthy salon industry, because this could be, you know, women enjoy that work. It's art, and it can be, you can own your own salon. It can be really empowering.
Yes. But and it makes other women feel great.
Healthy.
Yeah.
And it's exactly. Right. But it shouldn't be at the expense of your health like it is right now.
No, it should not be at the expense of your health. And at least, you know, I don't want to, I feel disingenuous. I mean, for commercially available, you know, Aveda, it is 97% pure, and there are things in it. But at least when I go to get my hair dyed, I'm not crying and smelling, and it's a disgusting thing. I mean, even my husband says it when he goes into our salon. For some reason, he'll say, it doesn't stink in here. I think those are his exact words.
That's a good sign.
Okay, we cannot get off the show, and we're not close to the end, but we have to talk about this. Detox the box. This will be a first for Mrs. Green's World, and bring it on. Talk about detox the box.
Yes. Well, we started this campaign at the very end of 2013. We released a report called Chem Fatale, and it really, what we did is we rounded up all the available research studies that looked at chemicals used in tampons, pads, douches, wipes, sprays, the whole sort of world of feminine care products. And what we found is that, you know, unfortunately, a lot of these products can contain carcinogens, endocrine disruptors. There's hidden fragrance ingredients. And so, again, particularly for, a category of products that we're using in such a sensitive place, we feel like it's very important that we know, A, what all of the ingredients are that are in these products, and that they're thoroughly regulated so we can be confident that we're not exposing ourselves to toxic chemicals.
And just for a little humor there, not ever top of mind for men either.
No, never top of mind.
This is not coming up on their radar.
No.
Oh, I wonder if my wife's feminine care products are healthy. And I mean, it's fine. It's not that they should be, but we should...
Right.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. So right now, the FDA designates tampons and pads as medical devices. So there is, which is a whole other conversation we could have.
Yes. The rant. We can put it on the rant.
Put it on the rant. But so there's no ingredient disclosure required for those. So we actually tested some Always pads in 2014, and we found acetone, we found styrene.
Acetone like you take your nail polish off with?
Yes, yes.
Good to know.
Excuse me.
Good to know.
We don't really want those, at least I don't want those chemicals near the most sensitive part of my body.
It makes me so mad.
It's fascinating.
It's awful.
You know, we learned, you know, a lot of interesting new research for us, too, as we took on this report. And one of the things that was fascinating is, you know, we can understand that vaginal tissue is absorptive, but we learned that it's one of the most absorptive tissues on the body. And in fact, drug companies are actually exploring it as an avenue for drug distribution, because studies have shown, in particular, the absorption of estrogenic chemicals leads to systemic concentrations that are 10 to 80 times higher than if you took that same dose orally. And I just find that so fascinating, because that just demonstrates, wow, we're talking about a really high route of exposure that is not being thoroughly looked at. And so if the whole feminine wipes market is really growing right now, and it's really being marketed to young women, to young girls. And so if there are chemicals, particularly, you know, endocrine disruptors, chemicals that are going to mess with our hormone system on those wipes, and then we're using them on this vaginal tissue that's going to absorb them in these high concentrations, that is not okay, and that needs to be looked at. And nobody is looking at this. Nobody is asking this question.
Nobody's even talking about it. Because
Nobody's talking about it.
I mean, it's absolutely so true. We have to get that lawyer that took on DuPont.
Yes.
And got them shaking in their shoes about the toxins from the chemicals that they expose us to on a daily, minute-by-minute basis. I want to finish that, and then we have about 4 minutes, and I want you to give, we have 3 minutes, so you have to like speed talk at this point about a couple of takeaways. Some of this information is so overwhelming, it has to be absorbed,
yeah.
You have to process it. Give us like one, two, or three things that people can do as a takeaway. If you were going to say, do one thing, women, men, children, who's ever listening to the show, go do this.
Well, I think the best thing that anybody can do is really go to our website, sign
yes.
up to get the e-news, because then you can take in bits and pieces at a time. What we try to do is provide tips. You know, you get a tip of the month, you get a newsletter. We try to feed bits so that it's not overwhelming, because this can be terribly overwhelming. So we can provide great, you know, we have a 10 simple ways to reduce toxic chemicals in your home. And it's not about going out and buying a new product. It's about taking your shoes off at your door, you know, making your own cleaning products. And we have recipes for that. But we really need people to get engaged. So we can help provide pathways for that engagement.
And where is that on the website? If you go to website, it's womenvoices.org, and where do you find that? Do you have it at the tip of your tongue?
Let me know. I don't.
Or at the tip of your fingertips.
There should be a sign up right there.
It's okay. And I want to make sure that we're, because some people that listen to this, I tell you, they will go do it. I mean, I will be one of them. Yep. And my friend Mary, who's here in the studio with me, she'll do another, and you know, our team. But it would really be great to know that. And you know, you can even email me back and we'll put it out with the information. Okay.
It's right on the homepage, a big button that says subscribe.
Subscribe. Okay. On the homepage. Great. Okay. So we know that now.
Womenvoices.org.
Womenvoices.org. And then while you're there, I invite you all to go and see what they have to say about Brazilian blowout, because you will not want to miss that, that write up. Okay. we have 1 minute left, and if it's okay, I just want to say thank you. If people do sign up and get engaged with Women Voices for the Earth, we'll be called upon to do simple things, take action, sign a petition, you know, it's very directive, and it helps us to know what we can do. And I appreciate Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Get on the pages that you have. Great content, whatever works for you. If you're younger, it might be Instagram. If you're me, it might be Instagram, because I love Instagram. So anyway, thank you, Erin Switalski. Thanks the founders of Women Voices for the Earth. Everybody, Tuesday night, T. Van Hook from Habitat for Humanity, and next Saturday, David Corton. Change the story, change the future. You won't want to miss it. Make it a great, green, consciously lived week. Thanks, everybody. Erin, thanks again.
Thank you.